Welcome to this week's edition of Get the Fork Out. This week we have another friend of mine from Holland, Joost van Gorsel. He's a very famous provisioner in the industry. I've been using his and his brother's services for years. Awesome dude, awesome service. Welcome, Joost, to Get the Fork Out. How are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks, Brennan, for having me on your show. It's been a long time, actually, that we saw each other. But thanks for having me. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, how I started this business. I think I was 18 years old. I had no clue. I was playing on my Xbox at home, and I did my I did school, my university, and at a certain stage I had to do a traineeship. However, when you're 17, 18 years old, you don't actually have that network of getting into involved in the shipping industry or the yachting industry. So basically, one of my dad's friends sort of he had a company like that, and he introduced me to his company. So I started at the shipping company of selling meat fish to commercial vessels like oil tankers, like bulk carriers. But there was only one rule: it has to be cheap, and it has to be a lot. So
okay,
yeah. When I was there, it was fine, but it doesn't actually make me excited at all. So
was that the company that I met you working at?
Yeah, 10 years, 15 years ago now. So the first year it was a long traineeship, and I thought I had to quit. I don't like it anymore. It's nothing about adding value in the whole supply chain. And I thought I'll leave the job. At a certain stage, that particular guy said to me, "Joost, what do you want to do?" And I said, "I don't know. It's boring." And then he said, "Why don't you go to some shipyards here in Holland that make yachts?" Because he used to supply cruise vessels at a certain stage. So I said, "Okay, let's give it a try." And I went in my car straight away to Ocean Cove to saw the first boat. It was called Amavi. And that's basically the first boat. I knocked on the door, tell them who I am, and they said, we need a provisioner. And I had no clue at all actually what a provisioner was. So I said, I'm a supplier. I can deliver you anything from eggs to meat. Tell me what you need. And they gave me an order, and it was crew quality, which is fine. But yeah, where the hell are you getting crew quality? Because I was not familiar at all with that question. Crew quality, guest quality. Right. I had no clue at all what I'm doing. So long story short, I went to a couple of Michelin restaurants. I had no experience in high fine dining, nothing at all. I was 18 years old. I went straight away to Parkheuvel, and it's a famous restaurant. You know that one in Rotterdam. It's like a French cuisine. And basically I asked the chef, okay, where do you get your stuff from? And he gave me some addresses. So I got a meat supplier. I found a fish supplier, some dry stores. And basically that's how I started 15 years ago now. And along the way, you meet a lot of new suppliers, new sources, new ingredients, stuff like that. And that's how I started like 15 years ago. And 5 years ago, my brother and myself, Martin, we decided to start our own company called We Supply Yachts.
Well, hold on one second. You know, so I just wanted to kind of do a little recap there because I think it's important. Like, you started out doing cruise ships, like massive, massive scale. And then within that company, if my memory serves, so I've known you a while now, is it just like you said, you kind of got bored and then you started provisioning inside this cruise ship supply company, and it was quite successful. Like, you guys were busy.
Yeah, we are. I think at a certain stage we started with 4 or 5 boats a month, and in the end we ended with I think 30 45 yachts a week, which is quite a lot. We all know when you're stuck in a job, you want to add value in something, and I think it was my time. I spent there 10 years. I had an amazing time there, and it was time to move on, to do something for yourself or to work, getting out of the industry. I was also thinking about that, to do something completely new. But I thought I had many chefs as friends, a good network. And I thought, okay, if I'm going to start this business again on my own, I want to do a couple of things. I want to add value. I want to add quality, and I want to build long-term relationships and help people
What do you mean by adding value? Just to clarify.
You know, in every business, when there is a certain point that you are reaching your the roof, how do you call it in English? Basically, when you're on your limit, you're having so many boats in your program that I didn't have any more the passion to give them the best of the best. Or basically, I was told to do volume. And yeah, we all know in this business, in yachting business, it's not about volume. It's about getting the fine, high-end ingredients from certain places and supply them to the boats, and not like hundreds of kilos. No, only a few. So the chef can work with that and tell the guest, listen, I got something amazing, instead of having everything listed from bulk suppliers that didn't fit my strategy anymore. That's why I left.
Yeah. And so you left, and then what's the name of it? Because we should have said this from the beginning. That what's the name of your company?
We Supply Yacht.
All right. And then you started with your brother, right? Martin.
Yeah, with Martin. And you know, when there's family involved in a company, it's always a bit like, what's going on? But in the end, we know from each other what his specific where he's very good in, like logistics and organizing the company. And my side is more, I'm specialized in food. I'm specialized dealing with the chefs all the time. And that's why we work so good with each other, because he's organizing the other kind of company that nobody sees. And I'm actually organizing, and the other side of the company. I'm the face of the company, basically, which is fine. And I like it. But
That's great, man. Because I was really happy to see you. Because are we allowed to say your old company's name or no?
Oh, you can. It was Nico, which is fine. Yeah. I had an amazing time there.
And that's where I met you. And it was really, you were great. You were at the time one of the few like accesses to all the really good stuff in Holland, in terms of, especially during the winter. What people don't know is like, you still have rich people on for guests in the wintertime, and it's really hard to find ingredients. You know, like it's winter in the Northern Hemisphere. Why these tomatoes taste like shit? Well, it's March. You're lucky to have tomatoes, kind of thing. But the Dutch are doing badass shit in terms of hydroponics and just different ways of farming throughout the year. So to have access as a chef, to have access to the Netherlands is a massive advantage in the winter.
Yeah, and it's also the quality is basically year round the same. And of course, in the summer, early summer, there are peaks that the quality is phenomenal, like fruit, some veg that we source from all kind of places in the world. But in the winter, we have access luckily to all those greenhouses, hydroponics, but also areas where there's a summer, from Australia, Tasmania, name it, and we import it basically.
It's incredible quality. Like as an American in the Caribbean, you'd naturally think I'd just get stuff from Miami. Like it's way easier. It's like half the quality, maybe less. It's just stepped on. It doesn't have the same kind of, and then to have like an actual provisioner in Holland go buy the stuff fresh from wholesale, it's next level. You can't compare it to Miami or Fort Lauderdale. It's just like, it's rough. It's rough. So yeah, you guys are, you're needed. You're needed year round, but especially in the winter, I think.
Yeah. And even in the winter, one of the things that we are specialized in logistics, getting this stuff everywhere in the world within maximum 2 days. And the whole cool chain is actually protected. It's guaranteed quality and guaranteed at a certain temperature at the place, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's really special what you guys do. And that's something that people that are watching this that aren't yacht chefs or not even in the yachting industry, it's like, it doesn't matter where in the world I am, provisioners, people like Yost and his brother, and We Supply Yachts, can get me stuff all over the world. Because a lot of times, say if we're in the Maldives, there's nothing local to buy. Even like in the Caribbean in the winters, there's really nothing local to buy. There's nothing that's going to really entertain, you know, the palates of wealthy individuals. Like you need a vast array of cool shit. And Holland's really, it's the logistics. I'm so impressed what provisioners do and what I think a lot of people don't know, even, you know, management companies and captains, is how important a good provisioner is to a yacht chef and to the interior staff in general. Like the guest requests we get like last minute, it's unreal. Or, you know, all your stuff is moving towards Italy, but now we're going to Turkey, and you guys just take so much of the weight off of the chef that it's incredible. It's super valuable.
Yeah, it's from my side as well. It's this whole industry is, yeah, I'm quite lucky that I'm in this position because I'm located in Holland. I have access to the amazing products, but also the logistics is pretty good organized here. And yeah, I have access from Amsterdam to all the international flights all around the world. And the other thing, what is very important in this business is, especially when you're flying stuff over, local agents that can actually collect the goods, know the way to through customs and get them on time to the boats. So it's valid or that the agents are as well on your side and make it happen in the time frame the boat needed.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't really think of your network on the other side of chefs. Of course, you know a bunch of chefs, but on the very end of that, kind of from the order to the delivery, is an agent. Sometimes in an unstable country where you need to have agents that you can trust, and there's budget for bribes too, right? Sometimes you need to like pay to get stuff through.
Yeah, 100%. And it's very, very difficult or important that you don't step on those toes, on the agent's toes.
Yeah.
Because they want to sell as well their provisions. And yeah, but they don't understand that a boat needs the highest quality. And I think my competitors have the same issue because they want to, every boat has their own, of course, relationships with provisioners. But I'm sure that we all have the same issues. And I think as well, the agent is one of the most important things if you are on remote locations that is willing to work with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of setting his own thing.
I agree. I always used, as a rule, and it's just my opinion, but I always use standalone provisioners. I never use some sort of like really weak, weird provisioning arm of an agent because it's just a tacked on service that, like, your reputation is really all you have. You know, like if your reputation gets fucked up, then if their reputation gets fucked up, it doesn't actually matter. There's still going to be an agent.
Yeah. And for me, it's important that I have long-term clients to make sure I'm living.
Yeah. So I can see like, okay, the incentive for an agent provisioner is a money grab, where the incentive for someone like you is like, yeah, of course you're going to get paid to do this service, but you can't do it half-assed. And I think that's what, because usually you pull in the port and the captain will usually want you to use the agent can get us stuff. I'm like, oh, it's not the same. Nah, it's just not the same. So
but you are a professional chef, so you're aware of that. But if you're greedy or just in the market or just in the industry, then you follow the rules of management, follow the rules of
captains.
And I think that's also one of the topics you want to discuss later on in this interview.
We can talk about it now, though. It doesn't matter too much.
But we often hear the phrase that we can't buy from you because we have to go shopping local, and we have to go to the supermarkets. We can't use provisioners. We often hear that. And it's not that I want to promote my stuff. I think in general, those agents where you're talking about, they make the better reputation, or some of them, to charge hundreds of euros extra on certain bills. Wow. What makes provisioners stupid, I would say.
I never thought of that. I never thought of like the agent provisioners, the provisioners inside the agencies are the ones like negatively impacting just the overall reputation of provisioners. I never thought of that angle. I'm sure it's true because they're shocking. My experience with them is like, go fuck yourself. This is not possible. Like, A, we're not paying that, and B, this is terrible quality.
Yeah, but I think when you have a sole provisioner, they deal on daily basis with chef. They have a good reputation. All the chefs know those companies when you speak with each other, who are good, who are not good. And it's hard to come. I think I have to say, a few years ago, like 5-6 years ago, I heard it more often. But nowadays, I still hear it, but not that often, because the chefs on these boats are getting more professional as well. So when the captain says something like that of management, they can reply instantly, listen, if you use a provisioner that's focused on provisions, they buy directly from the source, it's fresher. In a supermarket or locally, it could be maximum lasting 1 week. And provisioners mainly, their provisions last for probably 10 to 12 days. So you win a couple of days, the chef is on board, can spend time on menu planning, can spend time on whatever. But yeah, sometimes I don't get it. You let the chef go shopping, that the chef is paid as well to cook, but he also has to go shopping and he has to make menu planning in between charters, I think is insane. And yeah, when they spend more time on board, they can deliver higher stuff to the guest slash crew compared when you go out shopping for a couple of hours a day.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it's different. Like, if you have a full walk-in already, like you've already got a provisioning run in and you want to go out to the market in like Saint-Tropez or, you know, somewhere really
I
special
agree.
And it's great for the guests and they love that stuff, but that's not really what it's talking about. And I'm on your side with this one because I remember having this like really long write-up to a captain about why it's not really a cost effective or time effective use of time to go to a supermarket. So let's say you're in the south of France. Let's say it's like August. Let's say everything is really nice that time of year. So we'll take out like the extreme locales where there isn't anything to buy anyway. You've got to go to the supermarket. You got to fight through traffic. Let's be honest. Traffic is an issue in the south of France or anywhere in the summertime. Then you got to go to the supermarket. You got to pick all the stuff out. You got to put it in the cart. You got to bag it. You got to weigh it. You got to take it to the register, pull it out of the cart, bag it, put it back in the cart, take it to a taxi or a crew car, or maybe two of them because you had to buy so much shit, maybe three of them, unload everything into the hot taxi in the August sun, then take it to the marina, wherever that is, through traffic, unrefrigerated taxi, stuff's warming up, getting into the temperature danger zone. Now it's getting dangerous. Then it gets into a dock cart or 10 dock carts, but you probably don't have 10 dock carts. You probably have two. You got to get the whole crew involved in this whole line. Like, it's a logistical fucking nightmare.
Yeah. And it's 30 degrees outside.
And it's, yeah. And it's in a temperature danger zone and your stuff is cheaper and lasts longer because you're buying it wholesale, even though you mark it up because you're not doing it for free. Of course, you're going to make a profit. It's like, it's false economy. So I think management companies that don't have experience and captains that don't have experience see it as this quick, like, budgeting. Yeah, this is the smart way to do it. Make the chef shop himself. It's like, oh my God, I don't need to buy the potatoes. I don't need to buy the milk. Like, there's no inspiration there. You know? Like, we just need the shit all the time.
And you need to get credit cards. You need as well all the receipts, doing your administration. And when you use a provisioner, you have your bills nicely in the email, sent already. Everything is per budget code, which makes way more easier for the chef as well. And I think food safety is also very important because these days the safety on board goes up as well. And a lot of our clients require already a whole temperature control overview from when the provisions are being packed till the provision being supplied. And they want to have that cool chain on their email and Excel.
And how do you do that? Does like the driver like note down the cool box and freezer temperatures on the way to say Turkey from Holland? Or
it's a tracker inside our vents, basically. And you can just click on print or you can export it. And all the items that arrive in our warehouse are being temperatured as well. So when fruit and veg comes in, for example, it needs to be around 4 or 5 degrees maximum. But when frozen stuff comes in, it needs to have at least minus 18. If it's, for example, minus 14, minus 13, I have to send it back because the core temperature is not correct.
Oh, that's important. I feel like this is really like, this is one of the most important points for me to use provisioner. Also, back to what I said earlier, you're like on let's say back-to-back season, charters, busy private, whatever. The provisioner is like your right-hand man or woman. They're so important. They're like just as important as everyone else on board. You know, they're like your person ashore because these guest requests can get crazy. Like they could just get like, or if they're just not even if they're crazy, like, can we get lobster tomorrow night? All right. And you call it a provisioner.
Yeah, why not?
And it's like, and I think also what maybe cabins and managers don't understand too, of course, that you need the products and you order them and they show up. but it's the service that you guys provide. That's why you guys mark it up 20%, you know, like that for the service you provide. And if I got that markup wrong, correct me, but like the stuff just shows up. Like I can't physically go out and buy it. I'm too busy. My sous chef's too busy. We can't just send deckies. Maybe we're running overnight. Like we're already kind of like skint in terms of free time. So you have this person ashore, this entity, this professional entity that just gets you banging shit whenever you ask for it. Like it's hugely important. I can't stress that enough. Fuck buying that yourself. Okay. Jesus.
But can you explain to a charter guest that spend maybe 200,000 euros for a week on a boat or maybe whatever more that you bought everything in a supermarket? Because when you go to a restaurant, you don't ask the chef as well to go to the supermarket and get their stuff. So yeah, how do you explain that?
Yeah, guess what, management and captains, you know what chefs and restaurants don't do? They don't go buy their own shit.
Nah, true.
It shows up, they check it off. They're like, oh, that's good. They don't like it, they send it back. And you guys are great about that. Like if there's something wrong with the order, you fix it. Like it's no big deal. Everyone's so
always.
Always.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I've got myself all heated. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, all right. It's a hot topic. I'm sure that other provisioners deal as well with these issues, and also a lot of chefs in industry, 100%.
But I think that's half the reason I do this podcast. It's like for the greenies. Like I'd love to give them a resource about like, all right, well, here's two people that are way more experienced than me talking about this topic. And if you want to send this to the captain, feel free. You know, like I think it's going to help in terms of just allowing the chef to do the best job they possibly can does not mean them throwing 4 hours away to bring back some hot food in three taxis. Like, come on. Even for crew, do you think even for crew food, can you beat like Carrefour prices?
I think I can beat it. The reason, hopefully other provisioners back me up as well. When there's longevity, when there's a client, you want to use you the whole season, even in summertime, but also in downtime. For me, crew food is very important because the guests are not always on board. So I have to make it interesting for the chef to be able to as well have deliveries. Because when I'm more expensive than supermarkets, for example, yes, I am more expensive, but not that more expensive because I can guarantee everything is fresh. I pack everything on the way you want it. So yeah, that's more. Yeah, you pay a little bit more, but I can promise that the produce will last 2 weeks at least. All the dates are good.
Which it does.
Exactly, yeah. And if you go to supermarket, you never know how long that salad is already in the presented, for example. And maybe that salad goes off in 5 days, so you have to go again. So yeah, I would say if there's skeleton crew, I would say, yeah, you go to supermarket and just take care of them. But if you are in a shipyard and you have to cook for 30 crew every day, I would say use a provisioner, do it every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And give your sous chef some time off and make sure you have your time off and make it yourself a little bit easier and run, maybe you're one chef or two chef down and you can do what you want. But then at least you give them time off as well. So yeah, what is important? To have two chefs cooking on board so you can shopping.
It's a strange false economy, I feel like, with people in management positions without kind of the experience. Like maybe if you're a 30 meter and you're not that busy, then go to Carrefour. But like
I agree 100%.
If you're a 30 meter and you're doing back to backs, like now just get it delivered.
100%.
All right, so we beat that conversation to death. I feel like I've calmed down a little bit, but I think it's good to have this reference for greenies. At least they can fall back on it. What's do you have any like stories of woe, like any crazy like chef needed something in the Seychelles and logistically the whole thing broke down or weird guest requests?
I think. Yeah, one of your questions were, what you said, strange requests and stuff like that. I think in yachting, nothing is strange anymore. I'm in this business already for 15 years. What is strange? I think these days, it's not anymore about a strange request or then something broke down. It's all a matter of time. How quick can you get stuff over? Because in the past, guests were actually telling people, "I'm coming," but these days, they just pick up the phone or they call the captain, "I'm coming tomorrow, get it done." So
Yeah, stand
we had a
by.
busy yeah we had a busy charter client. They were back to back the whole summer. That was last year actually, and it was Monday evening. I got a call, "Joost, we need a full order from you in the Cyprus Wednesday morning."
Oh.
And that was in October, and I said, "Yeah, but there, yeah, it's COVID is here. There are not many planes available. I will check if I can find commercial planes, like the commercial lines that were flying back from Amsterdam directly to Cyprus." And we found a few. They had options on Wednesday, but they were landing in the afternoon, very late. So pretty funny was, it was on WhatsApp, and I said to him, to the chef, "Okay. We have a flight on into Cyprus. It will land in the evening around 8:30, 9-ish. So you have it on board by 12." And he said, "Joost, I can't have that because my charter ends on Wednesday morning, and the next charter comes on Thursday. So it has to be ready on the dock on Wednesday afternoon when the boat comes in." So I said, "Yeah, then the only option is a private plane." And he said, "Just on WhatsApp, go for it." And I said, "What? What?" So we ended up chartering an Airbus A320,
Oh.
like a big one, and then of course we had the conversation with the chef at the same time, the pricing of that big one, and it was above the 200,000 euros for just one way flight from Amsterdam to Cyprus. And that money wasn't the issue. The only thing was it needed there on time, so when the boat comes in port, the provisions need to be on the dock straight away. So we thought that we had solved everything. So we got the plane, the food came in on Wednesday morning. So we had, sorry, on Tuesday morning. So we had the whole Tuesday of packing everything nicely. But then the other issue came. Everything was packed, and Tuesday night we went to the airport and went to the plane, but it was 12 pallets. And these days, an Airbus A320 is basically a passenger aircraft that normally goes from Amsterdam to Barcelona, good kind of planes. And seven pallets fitted actually in the cargo door downstairs, but the
Yeah.
other four pallets didn't, there was no room anymore for us. So what we did basically, we used all the luggage compartments plus all the seats in the plane. So every luggage compartment we put a box in, but even the seats in the plane, we put the boxes in there, put a seatbelt over it, clicked it, and I will send you a picture so you can show it in your podcast, in your video,
Yeah, definitely.
how it looked at Boston. Because even the captain of that plane didn't saw it actually. Never, never. It was so funny. Yeah, it was there was
So,
yeah and the, and
how
everything
did
actually and it was loaded. Plane left on Tuesday evening at 11 o'clock in the evening. Arrived at night at Cyprus. The agent there did a pretty good job. He unloaded the plane 8 o'clock in the morning, put everything in a frozen and refrigerated truck, came on the dock, and everything was ready there. I think it was the most funny thing last year in 2021.
Expensive, stressful, COVID, like just get it. Like money doesn't matter. That's a good story,
Yeah,
dude. Yeah.
it was pretty cool. Yeah, and we never forget that chef on the WhatsApp approved the plane. Like,
Just get
just get
it. So
it
what was
done.
how much was the order versus the plane?
The order was about 50K, not now 50, 60K, and the transportation cost was above the 200K. So it was not really in balance, but they
Only in
needed
yachting.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
What, because I had this question pop into mind when you were talking. How much of the planes are full of food? I heard like a lot of these commercial flights, just the bellies are just full of storage and
Yeah,
packages and food and
especially to all the Caribbean destinations in the winter. A lot of the supermarkets rely on those aircraft. And of course, the yacht provisioners use basically, I would say, 70 to 80% in November, December, and January the space. Especially to St. Martin, I think I'm the biggest consumer of aircraft space on the KLM flights from in November, December, and January. Yeah. But yeah, to answer your question, there is a lot of exports actually from Europe to all the small Caribbean islands. And of course, you would think of that they have a lot of locally, but that's not true.
No, it's not. I mean, I know the Bahamas aren't the same as... No, I was in Antigua. Yeah, there's almost nothing grown locally. And it was during COVID. It was April 2020. All the provisioners had left. And there was just... So they get some supplies by boat, I think, once or twice a week. But and I wasn't allowed off the boat to shop anyway. So we found this woman who had closed down her bar and she just wanted to make some money. So she was our provisioner ashore. It was awesome. Like, it was made it work, and the guests were super chill. But there's nothing grown locally. It's so scarce.
Yeah, and that's grim. another interesting topic to talk about. It's not on what we discussed, but there are a lot of agents in the Caribbean, or basically the customs say, sorry, you cannot import that because it's prohibited, or we are growing it ourselves on the island. So they want to push the local economy. Which is great, right? Because I think when there are boats in, I would say support as much as you can the local community. But for example, in the Maldives, we send eggs. But if you go to St. Vincent and the Grenadines, it's insane what you cannot actually send because they grow it locally. But then the chef places an order at the agent to get it locally. And they come with chicken. Nah, it doesn't taste. It's nothing. The eggs are useless. A lot of those items, and I think that's what I'm working on as well with all the local agents on certain specific islands, how we can improve the knowledge at the customs and the government. Okay, it's a yacht. They want to have the highest quality that is available. They won't actually get it locally. What can we do to make it happen that the boat actually can get the stuff imported? Because when that's happening, the boat is happy to stay there. The guests are happy. So basically, the whole supply chain is happy. But when they go locally, sometimes the quality is so bad that what's actually locally grown compared to what you can fly in. So that's also something where we are working on with a lot of agents at the moment.
What's the farthest you've had to send food?
The farthest. Galapagos, Argentina. My drivers like, for example, deliveries in Norway. They love it there. Yeah, the weather is amazing, and the views are spectacular.
I was just there. It's awesome. I love it. I agree. I get it. And the driving is supposed to be amazing. I didn't do any driving, but oh man, it was a beautiful place.
Our drivers love ferries. So, for example, to Greece, yes. Athens, Crete, everywhere in Greece, they would love to go. It's a long drive, but the ferry, they love it. They see dolphins. Yes.
I thought it would be to like take a nap, but they're like, no, just to be like some sea air.
Yeah, they really like the exploring stuff. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to crank open the questions. Like, I like using the questions as a guideline and just like letting it go how it goes. Like, it's more, feels more natural than hammering out questions as fast as I can. Okay, well, here's a political one. How has the invasion of Ukraine impacted your business and supplying some of the yachts that are being taken?
Yeah, that's a political question, I guess. It has a huge impact actually in our company, in our industry as well. Imagine all the crew that is working on all those sanctioned vessels. I saw an article yesterday, 4,500 people, crew, are actually in total working on or for those vessels. They will probably go away or find another job. But 4,500 people, they are looking probably soon for a new job. And in our company, it's not good. No, it's not good. We never support these actions. And in Europe, there's a sanction list. So when people are on a sanction list, as a European citizen, you cannot actually support that. So when a certain person is on the list, I cannot supply them. If I'm making the choice, I'm going to supply them, then I become probably a war criminal and I can go to jail and my company can be closed in the end because I'm supporting it. No, but that's the other tricky thing. From some vessels, you don't know actually if they are sanctioned because you never know the owner. And of course, you can Google.
And some of these people have been clients for years. You know, like it's hard for you to say no, I imagine.
Yes, but they all understand because I would say mainly of our clients, they're all basically the crew is all UK or European or they all understand basically, or Australians, New Zealand, they all understand what's going on. And at a certain stage, they are thinking as well about the whole situation. Am I still want to work for them?
Right.
That's the next question. But the sanctions went in on, I believe, the 24th of February. And from that moment, we said to all our clients that are sanctioned, sorry, we cannot work anymore with you. It's over. Yeah, it's hard. But I mean, I didn't say it like that. But in the end, you as a company, we don't want it. But we are not allowed even as well, because our government is checking as well what we are exporting. And when they found out that you're exporting to one of those boats or clients or sanctioned people, then you have a huge issue in the company. Seriously.
Yeah, that's gotta be tricky for you. I'm not envious of that position where you gotta tell people no, you know. But again, you don't want to support it. Your hands are tied. There's nothing you can really do.
No, and of course there are people in the market, like captains, and when you ask them a question, who is the owner of the vessel or who's basically the ultimate beneficiary owner, they would say it's a company. But
right.
No one would say the name of the owner because everyone signed the NDA, which is okay. But the boat is never owned by a company. Of course, on paper it is, but the U-boat is always an individual person. And we have to do a lot of background checks these days when we are onboarding clients. And it's very difficult because beside the government is checking us, we also have a couple of banks that we use to get payments in. And every bank in Europe has as well their own standards. For example, one of the biggest bank in Holland, they are using the guideline of the states, and they have a different sanction list than other banks, because some Dutch banks, they use the European sanction list. So I'm a European citizen, so I use the European sanction list.
Yeah.
So it's also pretty vague to find out who is on a sanction list and what list you are using. But we are using three lists, and we make sure we supply no one that's on the list.
Wow. It's such crazy times, and it happens so fast. And then you just have to deal with the whatever fallout that directly impacts your business with massive legal ramifications. If you don't check the three lists, like, stop, dude, stop.
Yeah,
and it's only going to get busier during the season as well, where you might not be able to check.
Yeah, so I think it has 100% of an impact in our company. It has 100% of an impact in the industry, on the cruise side, but also on the charter market, because a lot of charter brokers, they probably had to cancel some charters because
and boats.
Yeah,
so we don't have Russian charter. We don't have charter boats owned by Russians, and we don't have the Russian charter clients as much anymore. Maybe we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. But that's why I'm very keen actually what's going to happen this season in the Met, because I heard already a lot of stories that some boats are back to back booked, but other boats they say sorry, we had to cancel. Yeah, a few charters are cancelled, and now we're looking for potential charters. But who is going to fill the gap?
That's it's been some interesting few years in around the world like everyone, the more nimble you can be on your feet, the more you can pivot and make changes, like, because you don't know what's going to happen between COVID and this. It's just nothing. There is no normal anymore. There's nothing. You can't refer to last year.
No. And we as a company always try to be flexible as possible. So when there's something like a market change, we can easily trim down a company to a skeleton crew and still deliver the quality and the service. And we can also pretty quick expanding the company with people to make sure we can actually handle the growth. But yeah, it's that's what you learn in these strange times, that you have to be flexible at all times and not attached to for long term to big things to make sure you can still pay your bills in the end.
Yeah, I think you learned that during COVID, where you probably had to downsize everything in 2020 because the whole industry stopped, and then it kind of started again. So I guess the silver lining is you're probably more efficient than you've ever been.
Yeah, but even during COVID time, we grew as a company because everybody thought, nothing is possible anymore. But a lot of clients, they sent their own planes to Holland to fill up their plane and get the provisions to the boat, and they went actually in isolation on their boat. So for us, it was a very strange time because, there was less contact with the clients. But in the end, a lot of the boats, they still make it happen because they want to use the boat, and it was more safe to be on a boat than on land, on shore.
COVID charters. I did a couple of them, long ones.
Yeah. I know.
All right, let's see. Okay, this is a good one. This is a more positive, like a more less political one. Does your company do anything to help yacht chefs gain more product knowledge or kind of ingredient exposure, things like that?
Yes, 100%. We do a weekly video and blog. Of course, it's like the basics. We tell a lot of clients every weekly base some interesting bits and pieces about products on weekly base. And beside that, when a client places an order with us or places a quotation, we always go on WhatsApp and we say, listen, this is your order. It's amazing. However, this is also in season. This is pretty good. We call it the chef intake. When a new chef joins our company, we always give him a call. Okay, what's your plan for the season? What do you want to do? Are you a charter boat? You're private? Sometimes we ask where the clients are coming from, so you know a little bit of background and you can play around with that to send them information what's available. And I can imagine as a chef, when you have back to back, you're stuck in your galley. You're glad when you're in bed to get some sleep and you wake up early and you go for another day, boom, boom. But how to gain knowledge for chefs, what we try to do is actually Instagram. We try to be pushing a lot of product videos on Instagram. Beside that, we have a chef program. You've been as well in Holland for a couple of days. I showed you everywhere where we get stuff from. Fun. And you also know the story behind the product. And that's pretty cool to bring to the table as well when you have guests on board and you can actually tell, okay, I visited the farm. I saw the product. They take great care of it. And I think that's also something good to show and for a chef. This is possible. And we always open for that to welcome chef in our facility. I want to do the tours every week if they want. It's really cool.
Yeah, I've been to Holland a couple of times, and I can't recommend enough if you chefs want to go, because his suppliers are amazing. You can kind of walk the farms, you can meet people, and it's really, I know it sounds corny, but it's quite inspirational in terms of like just adding more fuel to the fire and more ideas. And it's definitely worth it. It's definitely worth it. And it's just, you can see the mechanics inside the machine of how the people in the Netherlands just grow stuff year round. And it's, can't recommend enough. It's really amazing. Go ahead.
We did recently, we took a random chef, a random client, and we said, okay, listen, this is your order profile at the moment. We want to bring you over to Holland, and you want to see before you go into a season what you're ordering then. And the funny thing was, the amount of the order was the same, like the value, but the variety was like 50% more, because he was able to when you order from an Excel file or from an online tool, you never know, oh, that's that. And when they actually come over and see what's available, they have a way more variety of items on their order, and they can detail more, I would say.
Oh yeah, definitely. And even like I remember asking you a few times when I've been tired and just wiped out by like end of August, beginning of September. It's like, what are other chefs ordering? You know, like what's cool? I'm just tired and chartered heavy. And you'd always be really good about like just some suggestions of new shit to try.
Yeah, we also sent, I would say, when an order comes in or quote, inspiration list. Hey, this is hot at the moment, or think about this. And of course, 90% of the chefs would say, ah, I'm not needed this time. But they keep it in their mind. And next time, maybe, it's something cool to do as an ID, for example.
Yeah, it really depends on the guests. Like if they're reaching 100%. To our clients or the owner, you know you're just not going to need certain things. But then, yeah, it just really depends. If there's a family, you're just not going to need certain things, super high-end stuff, microcrest. No. Like it's just, caviar, probably not. But it's really cool that you do that. I think it's important because we get to a certain headspace towards the end of summer, especially where you're kind of, the well is running low and the provisioner again comes in and saves the day. So you guys are super valuable. Let me see what else we got here on this little list. We hit the provisioner one.
Yeah, we did already. The other one is good to tell.
Yeah, well, let's talk about some of your suppliers then. Like I've been to like Nice to Meat and Pure or Poor, if I'm saying it right.
The fish company is amazing. We do everything from fresh fish. So when the only thing, we are part of the Fish and Season Association, which means when a fish is not actually in season, we don't sell it, or we source it from elsewhere. So when certain fish is not in season here in Europe, we get it from somewhere else where it is in season. So it's also a big step to do. I would say baking is a pretty big thing at the moment, like sourdough on board. Everyone is making their own bread. And everyone thinks they have the best bread in the world, which is, I agree, go for it. As a supplier, you see all those stories on Instagram that everyone makes their own sourdough, their own bread starter. And I was sick at a certain stage when I get an order in, always on every order, mini pastries, mini croissants, mini pain au chocolate, mini pain au raisins. And then,
so boring.
Yes, but there was never a good alternative to buy, actually. Yeah, no. Of course, you have
Bridor,
those,
right?
Bridor, Daily France, name it, but they're all made by factories. So it was on my list already for a long time. And I finally found a year and a half ago a guy. He's called Peter. And he won in 2018 the World Master Baker title in France, in Paris. It's called Coupe de la Boulangerie. He won that title in 2018 for two times already. And I asked him, are you able to beat the Bridor croissant, the Daily France croissant? And are you able to do that? And funny thing is, he said, yes, I'm going to beat it. And now we finally found a good alternative for a small mini croissant, small mini pain au raisin, mini Danish mini pastries. And every month, the taste and the ingredients change. So this month we have cherry, we have some chocolate, but also some brie on top of it, that kind of stuff. But next week, it's different. And the quality is insane compared, of course, to the factory ones. So So for me, these are the gems in my business, to find new suppliers that are willing to make something and help the chef, because I know, and it's proven already, that a lot of chefs love the new pastries because it's, you can sell them if you made them on your own, and that's what you need, because you can do something else instead of making on your own those time-consuming products.
I'm glad you did that. I did. There's the oldest baker in Antibes. Jean-Paul Viziano, he's a friend of mine, and I had him do something similar, but because he's not set up for that, it was a huge pain in the ass for him. He's only has like a tiny chest freezer, so you had to make all the croissants and then freeze them on trays in a freezer. Like, But the croissants are awesome, and it told a good story, like you said earlier. Like there was that Brie Tordelli French shit. It's like a cliche. It shows no
It
love.
is.
It shows no character, and it's just
Yeah,
nice
and
to get something legitimately made by hand.
so he makes as well his own focaccia, which is amazing. His own sourdough bread, and a lot of chefs we supplied already his sourdough bread, and they say, "Oh man, it's fantastic!" But also the sourdough starters, like the Monodo, we sell as well in those tins from him, and that his Monodo is already 10 to 12 years old.
That's awesome. Great. What
So
color is it? Is it white, brown? Do you know what it
it's
is?
white. Yeah, I
It's
have a
white.
picture actually. I will send it over to you in a couple of minutes.
We've got a Dirty
Yeah,
Rye
I could.
one from, I think, from 2016. And the rye starter, I'm a massive fan. So much power.
Yeah, I have a
Yeah.
picture of my.
It's not very, like, when you feed it doesn't have this dramatic doubling. It just kind of like just stays like small and angry. And then you add it to like normal. Oh yeah, that's sick. It's beautiful.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah. I think that's that those are the nice touches where, especially where, I don't say this lightly either. I don't say it as like, oh, money's no object, but like for a little bit more money, you can get something that's just a lot better than Deli France, a lot better
Yeah,
than Brie d'Or.
and when you spend a little bit more money on other stuff, there's also one I want to say to you, talk about is spices, for example.
Yes.
Everyone buy their own spices, for example, at the metro, or they go shopping at a supermarket. Just spices. But for a little bit of money, more money or equal, you have amazing spices from really good sources instead of buying it from wholesalers. Just for example, we just have a very nice Ras El Hanout spice blend in, but every time it's different because it doesn't have a recipe. We buy it in Morocco from a small company. He exported it to us. But if you ask him what the ingredients are, every month there's difference. And the same for foie d'avant masala, like a curry or a Colombo curry. It's insane. And yeah, that's also something really cool to be able to get access to.
It's really, I have to revamp my spice selection, but also a Nootsack. So right next to
Oh yeah, Vanilla Venture, yeah.
So Vanilla Adventure, you gotta talk about that guy. He's a crazy animal and so cool. Vanilla Adventure is such an amazing supplier, and then right next to him is like Fresh Nuts is another thing right up there with Fresh Spices, where we just buy the
Yeah.
nuts, but like the freshness of this roast, and you can get anything made that you want, and just to have these nice crispy nuts. Also those curry macadamia nuts, the Ras El
Yeah.
Hanout macadamia nuts, like
It
so
is a
good.
bit more expensive, but they all
Yeah.
buy from small companies where they are grown. So the macadamia comes from Australia. They get everything from the source, which is amazing. And you know it's an authentic product. But if you go, what we see every day on emails, everyone wants these days sea burger. It's called sea burger nuts, which is commercial factory nuts. Nah.
Oh, the brand, you mean?
Yeah, Seed Burger. Yeah, Seed Burger, what's called? Yeah, the brand. Yeah.
And they have nice at Nutsack. They have I love their name too. It's like in Dutch, it's like Nootzak. I
Yeah,
think it's
correct.
nuts. Yeah.
They also
Also,
have amazing dried fruit.
that's what I was gonna say. The dried fruit game, such a high level where like I don't even really like dried fruit. I love their dried fruit, like their crystallized ginger, like such high level stuff where it's really easy to use. It's just
Yeah.
good.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So yeah, for me, I'm glad that I have all those good guys around me to be able
Yeah.
actually to have to get you or basically most of the chefs access to those items. And
What's the dude's name at Vanilla Venture?
Justin.
Nah, he had a crazy name, didn't he? The guy with
Clearnet?
long hair? Like the owner. Oh, it
Yeah,
doesn't matter.
Gerard. Gerard. I think Gerard,
Gerard.
maybe.
All right. Yeah, it was like his nickname was like Fudgy or something. I don't remember. It's a weird nickname. But he was an ex Michelin star, like worked at a Michelin star restaurant. So I shit you not, like the dry store ingredients that this guy had were such high level. Like it was so easy to make food with. So Vanilla Adventure for
It
sure.
it's pure. 100% pure.
Yeah. Those guys were
And
cool too.
yeah, and the other thing
Sure.
is for me to get, I don't want to make it longer, but to get a lot of, yeah, these days you want to have, you want to, ex yeah, keep the chef exciting about stuff. So we started a direct import line from Japan about fresh food, which is also cool, but it's expensive. So yeah, I always buy on a monthly basis some items in and try to get rid of it, but it's not that people are really fussed for.
What is it? Is
But
it
it's,
fresh fruit?
yeah, fresh food. Yeah, it's for example the peaches, the white strawberries, the muskmelons, the dark grapes, the Kyoho grapes, kamango, mangoes, that kind of stuff. It's really cool to have access to it, but
Yeah.
it's still hard to sell it to a boat because they're way too expensive.
That's
No one is
crazy
actually.
expense. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's fun to have sometimes those items in so you can show the charter guest actually, listen, this is something really, really cool. But yeah,
Yeah.
the other side is it's fucking expensive.
It's really expensive. Like what's a muskmelon? Like 200-300 euros per melon? Or
Yeah, true. Yeah, true. Yeah. And we even had the Densuke melons, like the black watermelons, for around 500-600 euros. It's insane. Peaches, 150 euros for a peach. It's crazy, but yeah.
150 euros per peach. Fuck.
Yeah.
If you have the right guests and they don't give a shit, then it can be fun. You know, as extravagant as that is, it's
It
fun for
is,
them.
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, even the Ruby Roman grapes, like that are red dark grapes, they go up from 350 euros to 1,000 euros per punnet, which is insane.
Wow.
It's the next
And this is
level.
all out of Japan because they have no room to grow shit. I feel like they do it to such a high
Oh,
level, but there's no room.
the other thing that you said about the Ukraine invasion, what do you think about all the products that are coming from Ukraine? What about grains? There's a shortage of grains now in Europe and
Really?
sunflower oil. Go to the supermarkets, even in France, in Spain, you cannot buy any more sunflower oil, only one bottle per person.
Whoa.
Yeah, and the other thing is a lot of the, because Russia's airspace is also closed now, Ukraine airspace is closed. So everything from Japan is maybe doubled now in price because of the shipping cost. It's insane. So it lets more impact on all kinds of fields, actually, instead of only on our industry.
Yeah, I never really thought of like connecting flights through Kiev for a supply chain. Of course, it's somewhere to stop over,
Yeah,
change
and
planes,
especially
whatever.
the flour now, if you want to have T55, T45, for example, like 2 months ago, it was easy accessible, but nowadays you have to actually request it. To get permission to get it because there's a shortage coming. It's,
Oh,
yeah, it will
no.
be, I think in a couple of weeks, it's even more difficult.
Oh, you hear that, chefs? Get all your flour now. But how do you do? Because flour annoys me because every country's got a different name for the same shit. Like, I think the easiest way would just to be like, just do protein percentage. Like, this is pastry flour. This is all purpose. This is bread. It's so annoying.
I agree on that because when you have a European chef, they did a proper like pastry training. They order T45, T65,
T55.
T55, or and for me, it's also easier if you just name it. I need bread flour to make
Yeah.
sourdough, for example, or I need pastry
Yeah.
flour to make. I know exactly
Because
what you need,
Italy
but
is O, double O, triple O. And then their bread
yeah.
flour is, believe it or not, it blew my mind. It's the bread flour in Italy is called Manitoba flour, which is a province in Canada. Makes no sense. Manitoba is for sure a state in Canada, and it's banging bread flour. It's really good.
Yeah, but yeah, that's all. Maybe another time we need to talk about bread flour. For me, I see them coming on all the order sheets and quotes. But yeah, sometimes for me it's also a guess what I really really want, and then we call them up, of course. But it's so difficult.
It's really tricky. It's all got a different name all
Yeah.
over the world. And for some reason, bread flour or any flour, it comes packed in tissue paper. So it's just always makes a mess. I don't know why, how that
Yeah.
became a thing.
And then the next question, it comes from a refrigerated truck straight into 30 degrees. After that, straight into the boat on 18 degrees or 21 degrees. So there's always a lot of humidity around the package. It's always paper. It breaks or goes open. Nah, it's not the
Yeah.
best. No.
No, I don't know how that became a thing. It's, I guess, just like to keep the price down. But yeah, I don't want to see it in plastic either, because then it's just more plastic.
No,
But yeah, tissue paper,
plastic.
it's not good enough. Like, it always makes a mess.
Yeah.
Oh
Cool,
man.
man.
Well, yeah, that was fun. That's all our questions. And yeah, I appreciate you coming on, man. It's always good to have a provisioner on for just advice and to hear your side of the story as well. We could have talked more about that, like things to make your life easier as a chef, like things to how to do your order in a way, because, well, let's be honest, like if it's easier for you and how we communicate with you, then just the order is more accurate and it's just everything's better. But next time,
Yeah,
come on next time.
but the other thing is we are the service provider, so we have to
Yeah.
give you the service, which means we have to make your life easier. So when things work for you, I need to make it happen, which is basically also a provisioner.
No, and that's true, but like I think chefs need to be respectful of the fact that, like, I've heard horror stories, and not from you or other provisioners, like chefs like putting their order on a messenger message and like just making it harder for everyone involved. And I think that's an important thing. Just make it easier on your provisioner. Like, just make it, yeah, they're providing the service, but I don't know, just you guys
Yeah.
look after us.
Next topic.
Next
All
topic. Next topic. All right, Yost. All right. Well, let's. Yeah, real quick. We supply yachts, and Yost will be the person that you talk to when you put your order in. But great dude, very knowledgeable with food, very knowledgeable about logistics. His brother will help you out. And yeah, thanks a lot for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, buddy. Thank you so much, Brennan, and speak soon, buddy.
All right, guys. That's it. Get the fork out. See ya.